On the 24th of May 1939, Ian Fleming walked into the downstairs grill of the Carlton Hotel at the bottom of London's Haymarket, where it met the eastern end of Pall Mall. The debonair 30-year-old, smoking a Morland special cigarette, looked a natural denizen of St. James's, someone out of a Woodhouse novel, as Cyril Connolly once noted, when he bumped into Fleming in his blue suit and Eton Ramblers cricket club tie in Brook Street. Fleming's club was Boodles, because White's was too noisy, and he often ate in Scott's just up the road. Someone extremely important whom he'd never met before had invited him to lunch, but the polish of Eton College and a brush of Sandhurst had given Fleming the social aplomb to deal with such an event effortlessly. He was good at charming older men and senior officer types. The trick was not deference, but confidence. Tall, dark and handsome, a broken nose gave him an interesting gladiator look. The chain-smoking, smooth-haired Ian Fleming was an easily bored flaneur and gambler who had yet to find his niche, a late starter and dabbler who feared that he might be a failure. Because he was amusing and posed as a cynical romantic, he had little trouble getting women into bed, though he dumped them afterwards rather too quickly. The primrose path towards alcoholism was already looking attractive. Sitting at the luncheon table were two admirals in dark suits. Fleming had already met the first, white-bearded Aubrey Hugh Smith, one of the two nautical brothers of the senior partner in Rowan Pitman, the stockbroking firm that gave him an annual income without engaging his energies. Ian Fleming had chosen not to go into his grandfather's merchant bank, Robert Fleming & Co. Smith introduced him to their host, Admiral John Godfrey, the director of naval intelligence who had the air of a stern Roman senator. Previously, Fleming had only spoken to him once on the telephone. They ordered. Fleming talked pleasantly in his worldly, well-informed way. Shuffling the cards of his CV to best advantage, he had plenty of foreign experience to convey to the men scoping him out. He'd spent time in Austria and Germany and in Switzerland at the University of Geneva and was fluent in French and German. He spoke some Russian too and had recently returned from a trade mission to drab Soviet Moscow, which he'd reported for the Times. The Soviet Foreign Minister Litvinov had just been touting an anti-aggression front. In Parliament, Lloyd George, Winston Churchill and Anthony Eden were all urging a revival of the old First World War Entente alliance of Britain, France and Russia, as the best way of containing Germany and Italy, who had just signed the Axis Military Pact. Fleming had picked up the taste for vodka in Moscow in 1933, covering a Stalinist show trial as a correspondent for Reuters. He saw the strategic value of the Soviet Union and the toughness of its soldiers, but reckoned it would make a treacherous ally. Perhaps they touched on other topics of the day, like the conscription which had been introduced in Britain in April 1939. Fleming was ahead of the game here too, already a reserve subaltern in the Black Watch. At such encounters, it may not be what is talked about that matters, but what is unspoken, the gut feeling or the first impression. Godfrey liked the cut of Ian Fleming's jib and suggested that the younger man might like to come into the office for a few afternoons next week if he had the time. With hindsight, we can see the lunch at the Carlton Grill as a crucial turning point. Without this entree to Fleming's 6 years in the Naval Intelligence Division, there would be no 007, and the immortal James Bond would never have been born. John Godfrey and Ian Fleming chimed because their curious, connective minds were similar. Both read more widely than you would expect on first impression. But at a deeper, unconscious level, perhaps the 51-year-old admiral and the 31-year-old stockbroker were drawn to each other as surrogate family. Godfrey had three daughters, but no son. Fleming had three brothers, but no father. Val Fleming was killed 8 days before his son Ian's 9th birthday. Now, 4 days before his 31st birthday, Ian Fleming had found his patron.